702. Weekend Breakfast with Refilwe Mpakanyane.
Live, online,
smartphones,
DSTV channel 856,
92.7 and 106 FM.
It's 9:37 on the Saturday edition of Weekend Breakfast. I guess we're in the final stretch, the final about, 22 minutes of the program, 22 minutes and 15 seconds of the program. And, of course, what do we do at this time on a Saturday morning? We talk books, we talk literature, and very happy to welcome to Weekend Breakfast this morning Sean Duval, who is a writer as well as books editor at News 24. And Sean is doing us the favor of this morning bringing us three books that he suggests we take a look at that will unpack and lay out for us the state capture years. So let's get into it. Sean Duval, welcome back to Weekend Breakfast. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Good morning. Cool. So, Sean, you have curated a list, a short one, but I think a rather impactful one, a list of three books that lay bare the state capture years in South Africa. And they are Our Poison Land by Jacques Paul, The Unaccountables, as well as Days of Zondo by Farrell Haffajee and Ivor Chipkin. Let's start with Jacques Paul's book, Sean, which caused quite a big splash when it was released. Why does that make your list?
Well, look, the thing is that these are all three big and important books mm-hmm. about state capture and corruption in South Africa. They all just come out within the last month or so. It's very interesting to me that obviously it's post-Zondo Commission. But it's interesting that, South Africans write quite a lot about mm-hmm. what's going on in body politic, and what's called current affairs books. In general, we've had great things. Greg Otte wrote about the assassinations in KZN, and we had an analysis of the gun smuggling guns to the gangs in Cape Town.
Yes.
We've had the tobacco industry looked into. Here we have three big books by important writers or institutions. The one called The Unaccountables comes from a group called Open Secrets.
Mm-hmm.
And these are, three big books, important books, summing up, coming to terms with, the years of state capture and the aftermath. Now, Jacques Poe's book is, the one that's getting an awful lot of attention now, because obviously his previous one, The President's Keepers, was a massive bestseller.
Mm-hmm.
He's now in this book trying to sort of pull together, what's happened since then. And it's basically the aftermath of state capture, in the sense that we kind of know a lot of what happened with, in the Zuma year. But we're still living with the consequences. We're living with a police force in which basically there is a civil war going on between various people in high up divisions.
Yeah.
And this has been going on for, quite some time. People are coming and going, and new commissioners and big bosses in and big bosses out. They're all at each other's throats, all accusing each other of corruption or of covering up stuff or whatever. There's a war between them and the independent directorate that's supposed to investigate the police. And this is basically, part of what is paralyzing crime fighting in this country. I mean, police don't actually solve any crimes. It took them 8 years to get Sid Zimayewa with people, whoever was accused of murdering him, to court.
Yeah.
Police force is paralyzed by this kind of infighting. And that's the kind of thing that Jacques Poe's book looks at. And then goes further to look at that's happening, or that has happened outside the ruling party, and that's to do with the EFF.
Yeah.
And the fact that as he claims, they're being funded by a tobacco baron who's admitted in the past to fraud. And he's finally giving them lots of money, and they're having, parties in penthouse suites and things. Living the high life.
as it were, whilst fighting on behalf of the people. What's interesting, Sean, just to deviate a little bit, is I listened to an interesting, or rather Eusebius Makeza wrote an interesting sort of thought piece on how books are, I guess, promoted. And in this instance, when it comes to Our Poison Land, you referred to Jacques writing about the EFF and this tobacco baron or smuggler. And there was an instance of parties and used condoms and alcohol in a penthouse. And, you know, essentially CBS argued that, you know, unfortunately, sometimes pulling out scandalous or titillating details within a book can sometimes do it a disservice, because, of course, Our Poison Land is about much more than that, right? And the fact that the EFF only crops up way later in the book and for a very short amount of time. So the focus ought not necessarily to have been that. But, you know, so if we look beyond how the book was initially publicized, or at least the extract used when it was first launched in the newspaper, how do we think around how Jacques has built up or built on his body of work thus far in investigating and writing about the state capture years? What does Our Poisoned Land give a reader by way of insights, wrapping up what we know so far? And you said something like, we're living the consequences of those state capture years, but perhaps we're also trying to anticipate what's coming around the corner as a country. We're bracing ourselves, but we're not quite sure for what.
Look, I think this weekend in particular we're doing that because, you know, there's stuff going on about how Cyril Ramaphosa is about to resign. And that would basically mean, you know, that, you know, and the RAND is plummeting and so forth, because he is the only leader that we've had so far, you know, since all this sort of stuff began in the late 90s, you know, who's explicitly come into the ANC with, or come into the leadership with, a reform agenda. But now he's tangled up in some scandal of his own. This is all part of the consequences of, you know, the kind of government that the ANC has been leading for, you know, the past 20 years, and the kind of, you know, state capture that has been allowed, has been even encouraged in the Zuma years. And, you know, it in a way, I think it helps South Africans a great deal, particularly in the wake of the Zondo Commission. And I think Ferial Hafiji's book, David Zondo, is very useful in this context, because it really helps to summarize and to help and get our heads around what came out at the Zondo Commission. I mean, it went on for nearly 4 years.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff was there. I mean, one lost point, you know, there was no, just endless testimony.
Yes.
And some things are more high profile than others. I mean, the fact that the EFF, you know, are living the high life on, you know, on a tobacco baron's money, says something about how they have, in a way, positioned themselves in the political landscape in South Africa. And they positioned themselves, in a sense, to the left of the ANC. It's been very much on the side of the people, on the side of economic redistribution and so forth, and yet their actual behavior and these kind of things, never mind the VBS banking, these kind of things, they are really, you know, as many, many, many people have suspected, in it for the power and the money, in exactly the same way as, you know, many, many leaders of the ANC of the past 20 years have looked like they are really just in it for the power and the money. And that has a bearing on how I think citizens and voters look at those parties. You know, when you drive through a city like Johannesburg, you feel like it's kind of falling down about your ears. You know, there's a pothole in every road, and there's, you know, the lights off for half the time, and then there's no water, certainly where I live, for days and days and days and so forth. Why are things falling apart like this? And, you know, that gets you thinking about government failures, and it gets you thinking about the way that the state was captured, and basically in many, many ways, hollowed out.
Yeah.
You know, Zuma made it as hard as possible for, I mean, first of all, he killed the scorpion. Then he made it as hard as possible for the National Prosecuting Authority to actually do its job. So, you know, there's a great deal that, you know, we're floating in the sort of sea of, we're still trying to get our heads around, we're still trying to work out what do we do about this?
You know,
what does the citizenry do?
Yeah.
And the Unaccountables book from Open Secrets is very interesting because it basically gives you chapter by chapter, it looks at the people who have been compromised in some way by this kind of corruption, who have been party to it, who have been enablers and so forth, and yet who are still, you know, scot-free, living the high life, having a great time.
Walking free, ostensibly.
And you know, when we look at South Africa's political structures and the way that you know, the government is in business with a whole lot of people, and there's all these secret deals and entrepreneurship and all the rest of it. You know, we need to start making sense of that.
Yeah, Sean.
And I think these books help us do that.
The Unaccountables, in many ways, might be a sort of synthesis of what lies at the core of the country's original sin, right? Which is this interplay between political parties and big business, and the seduction of politicians by business to dilute their sort of their ethics and their beliefs or their values. Mm-hmm. You know, in exchange for whatever it might be, whether it's Tony Yengeni and that Mercedes Benz, or perhaps even, you know, bigger gifts or bigger reasons to sell your people down the river. But in its totality, when you read all three books and you've curated all these three books, Our Poisoned Land, The Unaccountables, The Days of Zondo, what do you think a reading of these three gives a South African reader, someone who's trying to understand why we are here, how we find ourselves grappling with load shedding all the time, why the robots aren't working, why... you know, so many things. Why there's such a high rate of gender-based violence. How do we take this and synthesize this into a sort of useful compass for a way forward, whether on, you know, an intimate private level, personal level, or even, you know, as the body politic that you referenced?
I'm afraid to say that I don't really know. I don't know how. You know, I don't know what the big synthesis is. I don't know that we come out with one, you know, one particular thing to hang on to. I think we're working, you know, citizens are working in that direction, in a sense, and different people are taking different positions. Some people are getting more politically involved, you know, on the local level, for instance. I mean, I know someone I've known for a long time who, you know, the last local government elections decided that he would get involved with the DA and stand for the DA in Johannesburg because it was really, really necessary.
Bless you. I think that was a sneeze, right? Okay, bless you.
you know, people like that are getting involved. They're saying, what is the way out of this? I mean, on a political level, you know, it looks like we've really got to, you know, get the ANC out of power or give it a, send it a message. Has it not got the message that, you know, that we want this to end? And then on the local level to say, well, this is my city. This is where I live.
Mm-hmm.
These things are affecting my life. And, you know, and to sort of say, well, what can I do about it? So some people are going to say, you know, take a political solution and say, okay, well, I'll work for the DA because they're this party with the best chance of displacing the ANC in Johannesburg. They actually have a plan to fix a few things, which, you know, the ANC doesn't have a plan. And, you know, they take that route. Other people are getting more involved in community stuff. Other people are, you know, moving to a safer place. Mm. You know, I think we're working through this stuff. I mean, just what you said about the you know, the ANC and business and so forth, an interesting sort of historical thing on this is Peter du Toit's book, The ANC Billionaires.
Yes.
Because he traces, and I think he does it very sensitively, the way that, you know, the ANC came home in the early 1990 onwards, basically in a sort of penniless position and needed help from big business just to survive.
Mm. People and needed homes to stay in, were bought houses in Houghton, in various suburbs, etc. It all starts there. Mm.
And, you know, they turned to the people who had in fact begun the public negotiations process with the ANC when, you know, people like, you'd be Anglo-American and big business like that, were the first people to go and have public open meetings with the ANC, which was still banned at that time in the late 80s.
Yeah.
One of the beginnings of the negotiations process. And the other one, you know, the other one being called secret negotiations with, you know, the state books. But, you know, those people were people who, as Peter says, were sort of looking ahead and saying, listen, you know, what do we have to do to push this process forward?
If we're
and
to
that
survive.
Changed the ANC's mind in many ways on what was going to happen. You know, nationalization of all the industries and the ANC got closer to business.
Sure.
But what happened down the line sort of skewed that process. You know, BEE made a couple of people very, very rich, like our present president, but left a whole lot of people in poverty. State capture in the Zuma years made all of that worse. You know, COVID and so forth in the last few years has made that even worse. And we're sitting here kind of saying, you know, why can't the president do anything? Why?
Why is he incapacitated like this?
And so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, I think these are all parts of a big picture that we're trying to look at. And I can understand that, you know, when I read those three books and I came after reading Nancy Billionaires and after reading Karen Dolly's book, Clash of the Cartels, and other books about, the big, big crime organizations that have a foot in South Africa and are, doing a lot of crime, basically.
Yeah.
And the other books about the police, Paul S. Sullivan's book about the war in the police force, and as I say, Greg Otto's book about the assassinations in KZN, that kind of thing. You know, you can begin to feel overwhelmed by it all and just to think, my God, you know, everything is in just such a mess. Are we ever going to get out of this? Is there any way to help bring this to an end?
Mm.
And I think that that's natural. I think there is a sense of confusion with dealing with a great, big, messy, ugly situation. All we can do at this stage is use, you know, the kind of stuff that Jacques Poe's writing about and the stuff that Ferial Huffage's written about and the stuff that, you know, people like Open Secrets write about that build on a lot of the investigative reporting that has taken place. You know, people like Amal Bongani and so forth, they have revealed this stuff. I mean, we've got to come to terms with it. We've got to try and understand it. Otherwise, we'll never bring it to an end.
And I guess in many ways, there's much to be, I don't want to say grateful for, much to celebrate in what you've spoken about. The fact that South Africans are incredibly busy and hard at work in interrogating the condition that we're in and writing about it and publishing and investigating making sure that all this information is publicly available, is freely available. What we choose to do with it, of course, is a whole nother conversation. But yeah, the fact that South Africans are writing and interrogating the state that we are in, and we're quite prolific in that regard. Let's talk about very quickly, before I do let you go, Sean, just the work that has been done by Open Secrets over the years, and quite often the fact that there's a constant churning in the background that's not always apparent and public facing when it comes to accessing information about our past, about our transition into democracy, about the goings ons in government and governance in democracy. They have done incredible work.
Yeah, I think that they've done marvelous work, and I think that people like Henny van Vuuren did really excellent work on the arms deal. That in a sense is the sort of beginning of grand corruption in South Africa's history. In South Africa's the history of a democracy. But he also goes back to, you know, the apartheid years to look at the way that, deals were made between the then apartheid and the big banks and the financiers and so forth as part of their that process, you know, there was also a process of state capture going on then.
Of course.
And, you know, I think it helps to sort of look at it in a continuity to see how these things, you know, grow and change in their particular manifestations. You know, we've done a lot of work's been done on the arms deal. It's only very, very much later that, you know, the Sariti Commission findings that found everyone innocent were chucked out. You know, Zuma's back in court, we hope, eventually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these things take time to deal with. It'd be great if, you know, that sort of stuff could be speeded up. But as you say, a lot of it comes out of the investigative journalism that's been done by groups like Open Secrets, like Amar Bongani, and, you know, just from within Daily Maverick, News 24, the various organizations that have that investigative capacity.
Sure.
And I think that's very important. And I think we as South Africans can say that we're very lucky that we have that, that we have enough of a free media to be able to do that, and that we're able to publish books about it and get, you know, get the information out there. In that respect, we are very lucky, and it is something to be grateful for. You're right.
Yeah. All right, we're going to have to leave it right there, Sean. Really appreciate your time this morning and, of course, curating that list for us. Not exactly light holiday reading, but I think essential holiday reading if you can make the time and just to lay your hands on get your hands on those titles and, position yourself, get ready, as we say, and brace yourself for what's ahead. And even though we don't quite know what might happen, but all things are possible, we need the information, the relevant information to make the best decisions we can. Sean Duval, always a pleasure. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.